Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Welcome back to Bruin Talk. Our first guest today is Mark Pasenik. He is the Director of Sports Medicine here at UCLA. That's a very important job. How did you get interested in the field of sports medicine?
Well, John, I was an athlete in high school, and that kind of drove my passion. And as I got older, I really decided that I wanted to get involved in the medical side of things. And when I found out more about athletic training and how it meshes sports and involvement in the medical side, and got some exposure to it, it seemed like a perfect fit for me.
Now, you're here at UCLA, which is a renowned medical institution independent of sports. How does that help your job specifically with student athletes?
It is a fantastic resource. I mean, obviously, when we're dealing with medical issues, with the resources we have here at UCLA, using the UCLA Medical Center and having our doctors be a part of that system, it is obviously a huge advantage for us to provide the best care possible to our athletes.
You're at UCLA now, but you have spent time in the Big West at Long Beach State, and you've been to the Pac-12 before at USC. How have those experiences shaped where you are today with the Bruins?
Well, as having grown up in Southern California and really grown up watching the Pac-10 conference, then the Pac-12 now, it was a huge experience for me, not only personally being from a native of Southern California, but experience-wise. I knew early on in my career that I wanted to be a head athletic trainer, and you really have to pick your places to get that great experience. And USC was really a springboard for me. The head athletic trainer there was a great mentor for me. They have obviously a great sports medicine department, and it really allowed me to thrive and gain the experience I needed so then I could go on to Long Beach State, get my experience as a head athletic trainer there that really launched me to where I am today.
Now, we say head athletic trainer. I know that you guys do not like to be called trainers specifically. Explain
exactly.
That.
You know, that's really been a misconception and really a PR campaign that our National Athletic Trainers Association is really trying to push, because the word trainer can be conceived as many things: a personal trainer, a strength coach, and that's really not what we do. We do have some aspects of that and some training in that, but we are really on the medical side, and so making sure that when we're introduced, it is as an athletic trainer and not a trainer, it helps differentiate us from those other professions.
Now, most of us, when we see athletic trainers in action, it's at a moment of extreme tension in a ball game or a match. A player is down on the field, apparently injured, and you guys come trotting on very cool, calm, and collected in your khakis and your Adidas. What is that moment like? You maybe have to talk to the coach. You've got to calm down an athlete that might be very upset or in pain.
Sure. It's a very unique experience. In a lot of medical professions, you get to see the after effects of that when they've been evaluated and they're coming in for whatever injury or follow-up they need, whereas we see them from the initial injury many times. And as you say, a lot of those times can be very stressful because the nature of the injury and the severity is not known, and we really have to prepare for the worst. And that's what's unique about our profession, is that we are like a paramedic. We are like an emergency room physician, is that we see those traumas and we see those injuries initially and have to respond appropriately. And that's part of our training. We've gone through extensive training on know how to handle these emergent injuries, from a possible spinal cord injury or a head injury to a fracture. And again, know how to take them step by step to get the advanced care that they need from the field, from the court, from wherever it is, to the hospital, and then moving forward.
Now, you mentioned football, and this is unquestionably a very unique time in sports medicine relating to football and what a lifetime of football can accumulate injury-wise. Specific to subconcussive brain trauma, what do you focus on with the Bruins football program to ensure the highest safety standards?
You know, John, we really follow a comprehensive program based on the latest research that is available through us as athletic trainers and our team physicians, in consultation with our other specialists, the neurosurgeons, the neuropsychologists, to make sure that our program is appropriate for the current treatment of these type of injuries. And really the issue is there is a lot of gray area on what those standards should be for assessment, return to play, and things of those nature. And we're learning more that, again, these issues are lasting not just initially as the injury occurs and as they recover, but can have lasting effects. And so we believe that we have a comprehensive program that, again, is based on the latest research, evaluation, management, and proper return to play. And that's really our focus, is making sure we're staying up with those things and not saying, hey, we want to be on the cutting edge and be too aggressive or too conservative. We want to make sure we're doing our due diligence with these type of injuries.
In our lifetimes, the technological advances in sports medicine have been breathtaking. Think about arthroscopic knee surgery, where that joint was before that procedure came about. Where do you see sports medicine and maybe the technical side going in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, obviously, the ability to assess injuries and pathology in the muscle, in the bone, in the nerve is becoming much more advanced with functional MRIs and different scanning techniques and the improvement in those techniques. The identification and being able to really classify and see the tissue and see how injured is one component of that. Obviously, on the treatment side as well, surgical techniques are becoming much more advanced, and that can be a great benefit to us, but it also can hurt us, because when we get these advancements, sometimes younger athletes can get the perception that a more advanced technique means I can get back faster. And sometimes that equation can lead them to, again, some mismanagement their injury and not getting the best outcome possible. And so that's really where we're at now, is understanding how these new techniques are affecting what we do in our rehabilitation protocols and how that affects them returning to play, again, safe, healthy. So they've had the surgery, now we're seeing a positive outcome on the other end.
You talk about the student athletes and their recoveries. There is a preventative side to this. And although Sure. You're overseeing all the sports and all the athletic trainers as the director of sports medicine, are there kind of basic things, basic activities, basic advice you give to all student athletes as a down payment on them staying healthy?
You know, that's one thing that has really become prevalent in our field as well. We used to just do a physical exam that was the physician looking at the heart, the lungs, and making sure that everything is okay there and clearing them to participate. And then we wait for something to happen. The strength and conditioning coaches are working primarily on building endurance, building cardiovascular, and building the strength component. But now the shift has really come to us on our side by doing a much more comprehensive assessment of the knees, the shoulders, the ankles, movement patterns.
And that's on a per athlete basis?
That's on a per athlete basis. And I think we're really seeing that affect how we can head off injuries by identifying issues that they have coming in, and whether they be related to strength, muscle activation, movement patterns, muscle tightness, all those things play into identifying a possible dysfunction from happening, or an injury from happening, or lessening the severity when something happens. We certainly can't control every scenario, but we want to prepare our athletes as best as they can when they participate to reduce the risk of injury.
Is there anything specific and different for male athletes versus female athletes?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's there's differences between male and female. There's differences between sports. And it's really based on the demands of that sport and kind of what the athlete has done as they've developed and as they have progressed. But really, the difference between male and female is looking at, again, the same things we do in assessment of any of our athletes, looking at how it affects their strength, their movement patterns, joint laxity, how they do functional things. You know, if we're asking a basketball player to stop, pivot, and jump and be explosive, we want to make sure that they have the skills to do that. And as part of that assessment, we look at those inherent differences that we may see between male and female athletes.
Now, most, I think all of the athletic trainers and directors of sports medicine that I've encountered all appear remarkably fit in their own right, and you are no exception. So what's your fitness regimen like?
Well, obviously, my interest in this profession has come from a passion of being involved in athletics, and currently enjoying activity and things like that. And really my routine is, I love basketball, I love playing basketball, but I enjoy activity in general. And so, I really like to have that sense of a connection with an athlete to say, you know what, I'm not just putting you through things because it looks good on paper and I've been told it'll work. I'm actually willing to go out and try that and see what kind of response I get and have a good representation of what that means. And I think that's important in our field, to give that athlete a sense of connection, knowing how much time we spend with them and having to develop a relationship of trust, that's something that can help bridge that gap as well. So.
He is Mark Pasenik. He is the Director of Sports Medicine here at UCLA, and it has been quite a pleasure to visit with you. Thanks for being on Bruin Talk.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll be right back after this very quick public service announcement.
A trophy can be made just about anywhere. But there's one place where champions are made. UCLA, champions meet here.
Welcome back to Bruin Talk. It is time right now to honor the athletes of the week. This week we honor Kevin Love and Russell Westbrook, who just scored success in making the Olympic team in basketball as the Bruin Talk athletes of the week. Love and Westbrook, former Bruin standouts, are among the final 12 players named to the 2012 Olympic team. UCLA is the only college to have at least two former basketball players named to the Olympic team headed for London. Love, 23 years old, played for the Bruins as a freshman in 2007-2008 and helped to lead UCLA to its third consecutive NCAA Final Four appearance. He now is a standout for the Minnesota Timberwolves of the NBA. Westbrook, 23 years old as well, started UCLA from 2006 to 2008, aiding the Bruins in achieving consecutive NCAA Final Four appearances. He most recently led the Oklahoma City Thunder to the 2012 NBA Finals. Love and Westbrook represented the U.S. also at the 2012 FIBA World Championships in Turkey, where they won the gold medal. Congratulations, Kevin and Russell, and best of luck in London. If you'd like more information on any UCLA athlete, go ahead and visit the website, UCLABruins.com. All right, time now for our next guest. It is Evan Flagg, the Director of Ticket Sales here at UCLA. And Evan, you have quite a cosmopolitan resume.
I do.
Spent time in New Zealand. You spent time in the National Hockey League, which of course encompasses two countries. And now you're here at UCLA. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, you arrived in May directly from the Los Angeles Kings, and that organization was in the middle of what we now know as a championship run. Quite an interesting time to leap off the bandwagon.
Correct. My timing probably couldn't have been any worse. My first day here at UCLA was May 30th, and that was the first day of the Stanley Cup Finals. We were back in New Jersey, so they weren't quite back here at Staples Center yet, but literally was with the team all the way through essentially the first game of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Well, we all understand that when UCLA comes calling, everything else kind of fades to black.
You don't necessarily turn them down, that's for sure.
Now, here in your role as Director of Ticket Sales, what's your primary focus? With football and fall coming up, one would think that's at the top of your list.
Absolutely. That's definitely going to be my big focus. Obviously, with football coming up here really soon in September, big home opener against Nebraska, and then with, obviously, the highly touted recruiting class that I'm sure you guys are talking a lot about around here, we're trying to seize that opportunity and make sure we create a great fan experience both at the Rose Bowl and the opening of the new Pauley Pavilion, and increase our season ticket base, bring out some groups, and really fill the building. That's my job. You know, so when you see an empty seat, you blame me.
Now, I've been a sports broadcaster for really most of my life, so when I go to a game, I have a credential, and I'm working. What sells a ticket? What sells a season ticket?
It's tough. You know, when you have a brand like UCLA, that does a lot of the work for you, and it's great to have that opening. So what we're doing is really reaching out to new people that had season tickets in the past maybe didn't renew them because we were off playing at the Honda Center and the LA Sports Arena last year, and getting them back on for an exciting opening of Pauley. We're also talking to just simple families that come out to one game or two games a year, talking about some of the benefits of maybe jumping into a mini plan or a season ticket, and in a lot of ways just getting them coming out more. And usually people have such a great experience with us that they want to continue to come out to even more games. So it's our job is to get people kind of on the boat and then let the boat rise with the tide.
So one would think in your field that you're selling seats at the Rose Bowl and at Pauley Pavilion. Each of those are massively historic venues.
Absolutely.
So that has to be another aid, as well as the brand of UCLA.
Absolutely. I mean, I think two of the big things, just from a venue-only standpoint, you know, with the renovation of the new pavilion at the Rose Bowl. For those who haven't seen it yet, it's a staggering project. It's going to be an absolutely beautiful, beautiful area to utilize. And I think that just enhances the overall value of the building, not to mention it's probably the world's most famous stadium. So having that brand is an experience in itself, and that's certainly something myself and my reps really push. You know, and it's you're going to have a good time when you come out to the Rose Bowl and watch UCLA or see a U2 concert or whoever is there. You have a great time. So from that aspect, the Rose Bowl is fantastic. At Pauley, obviously, I think the facelift that we just gave Pauley, you know, with $136 million renovation on budget, on time, is huge. And I think it'll really give almost the same sort of feel that you get when you walk into a Staples Center, that you know that venue was created now for a live sporting event. Pauley will now have that, whereas before I think you had the history behind it, you had all the wooden banners, you had all the great moments that have taken place there, but now it's, you know, matched with the level of comfort and ease getting around the concourse that you might expect from a top-notch venue.
Now, you picked up your master's degree at the University of Auckland,
yes,
which is in New Zealand. Now, apart from the fine Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, what made you choose New Zealand to pursue that level of education?
You know, I actually, right out of college, won a Rotary Ambassadorial Scholarship, and that's a one-year scholarship for you to basically be an ambassador of goodwill for the United States in a country abroad. And New Zealand really grabbed at me for a couple of reasons. One, I knew I could get in and actually run a program that would work right off the bat. So my specific program was actually coaching basketball in inner city schools and using it as almost a curriculum to teach things like leadership, life skills, teamwork, you know, true life skills that'll help benefit that student for years to come. So New Zealand, unlike maybe some other countries where there may be some larger hurdles to get into schools, was a place that was pretty willing and open for me to just jump right in and start something, which when you only have 9 months is kind of a key. Second, I was drawn to the All Blacks, their big rugby team. I had studied abroad, actually, when I was doing my undergrad at Pomona in South Africa, and really liked the Tri Nations rivalry and just thought it was an unbelievable
That's
type
Springbok,
of sporting.
Springbok, right?
Yes, Springboks,
South African, yeah.
And the All Blacks have a pretty heated rivalry. So it was just a great way to kind of continue that, just being a natural fan like I am.
Now, from that, where they call sports sport, you eventually ended up working for the Ontario Reign in the Inland Empire.
Yes.
In minor league hockey. Now, that is a decidedly less international environment. How,
yes.
Well, or maybe, I guess, international with the players, but certainly not the fan base.
Yeah.
How was that transition, and how did that experience help shape you?
You know, I think that experience was more transformative than any. I had come back from my study abroad year. It was like kind of every other college student. What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? And I realized I wanted to stay in sports. I really enjoyed my time in New Zealand coaching basketball. I actually had a brief stint between with Nike doing a little mobile marketing tour, but I needed something more permanent and really kind of a career starting job. And I had the opportunity to open a brand new building in Ontario, the Citizens Business Bank Arena, another $150 million venue, and also a brand new team in the Ontario Reign. And as a new account executive, as a new person, I learned so much in those first 2 years. I mean, I had so much responsibility thrown on my shoulders. I think I even lean on that experience more so than my experience with the Kings, just from what I learned during that time.
To use a hockey phrase, you must have been standing on your head.
Absolutely.
In the IHL, because you graduated to the Kings, and from there, UCLA. How has this ascendancy worked for you? How did these opportunities come about?
You know, it couldn't have worked any better. I started with the Reign, spent two seasons there. My girlfriend, who is now my wife, was living in Santa Monica at the time, so I was doing a lot of cross-commuting around LA. I'm sure a lot of people can relate. So I was looking for something to kind of take the next step both in my career and get me closer to the significant other in my life. And I had the opportunity to kind of be the first call-up from the Ontario Reign to the Kings. But in the middle of our playoff season, you know, I spent two great seasons there, was one of their top performers, and absolute great culture there. You know, getting to go into work every day with Luke Robitaille is an experience in itself. You're not going to find a more classy individual than Luke. And then during the playoffs, my old sales trainer, actually from the Ontario Reign, had been helping UCLA kind of launch this new department, this outbound ticket sales effort that I'm currently heading. He basically is our consultant on the project and recommended me as someone that kind of ready to make that next step in their career, from being a top-notch, you know, revenue-producing account executive to managing a staff of account executives. So
you said your first day was May 30th of this year.
Yes.
So you have just kind of caught the tail end of a great baseball run to the College World Series, and now you set your sights for football and the other fall sports right on the horizon now. How does it feel to be a part of the Bruin family?
It's great. You know, it was something I regret to say this, didn't do out of high school. I actually attended Pomona College because I had the opportunity to play basketball. But coming back to UCLA, it was a place that, growing up as a kid in Southern California, you always follow, you always root for. Those guys, Kevin Love, Russell Westbrook, you know, going back to Tyus Edney, the O'Bannon brothers, you know, Toby Bailey, those are guys I grew up with watching and idolizing and mimicking on the playground. So to finally be here and be in an office where Ben Hallen walks by you, or, you know, see Tyus Edney walk by you and you're like, you know, 3-2-1 counting off in your head, and you can't say that out loud because that's just embarrassing. But it's really exciting to kind of be a part of this culture and be a part of the, you know, tradition of excellence that we have.
So walk me through it. Do you cold call people? Do people call you? How does that work? Sell me a ticket.
Yeah, so we're not doing too much cold calling. But for example, John, if you had bought a ticket on Ticketmaster and come out to a game last year, you're probably going to be one of the guys we call.
So if I bought a ticket for a game at the Honda Center?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so, hey, John, this is Evan Flagg with UCLA Athletics. I saw you joined us for a game last year and wanted to see what we might be able to do to get you back out with us here this season at the opening of the new Pauley Pavilion. Did I catch you at a bad time? And really from there, it's a simple conversation. You know, I would like to ask a couple questions, kind of know what it is, what fit might be the best for you. Do you like to come out with groups? Do you, you know, just come out to every Saturday game? Do you like to sit in the best seats? Do you like to just be in the building? You know, everybody's different. And one of my new reps actually said it's almost like a game of poker because every hand is different. And it's not about just selling the same thing to every person, because different people care about different things. You know, some people refuse to sit anywhere but at, you know, the 50-yard line.
Right.
So for that person, offering them anything else is irrelevant. So it's really exciting for us to get to know our fans, and it offers another level to your experience because now you have a relationship with someone directly at UCLA. And I try to instill that in my reps. You know, that's the best part of our job, because you can go online right now and buy tickets. You can even go online right now and buy season tickets. But the advantage to doing it with us is you're doing it with an expert, someone that does it day in, day out, and is going to be there in case something goes wrong. It's going to be there to kind of walk you through the process. It's going to be there to give you an educated guess as to where you should sit and where you'll be the most happy. And that's kind of the value that we provide by having a sales team now for the first time in a while here at UCLA.
One of the things I've heard from the administration in published interviews about the renovation of Pauley Pavilion was that they surveyed a lot of the season ticket and longtime fans about what they wanted in renovations. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I thought was very tasteful was that they did not convert tons of acreage into luxury suites. They didn't
right.
turn it into kind of a corporate-specific venue.
Right.
Now, what has been retained? And talk a little bit about that kind of nuanced tailoring of Pauley.
Absolutely. I got actually my first tour of it just two Fridays ago. Put the hard hat on and got in there. And the things that they've changed and helped are just simply the accessibility issues. You know, now the concourses are wider. Now the entries to each section you can actually get to from every part of the concourse, like an actual stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the types of changes that are just going to make it a more convenient experience for you as a fan. But we didn't cut into, like you said, some of the seats and say we're going to knock all these out and put in 180 luxury suites like you have at Staples Center. Because quite frankly, that's not what's going to be the experience that you're looking for from a college basketball point of view. You know, you go to college basketball because you want to see the students going nuts. You want to hear the band playing. You want to be in an environment where, yeah, there's 13,000 people, but every one of those 13,000 guests are engaged and loud and having a blast and reliving their childhood dreams, you know, right there on the Pauley Pavilion court. So I think that was really important to preserve the integrity and the history of the wooden era, but more importantly, of Pauley Pavilion in general.
He is Evan Flagg. He is the director of ticket sales here at UCLA. He used the word guest. We encourage you all to be his guest at an upcoming UCLA Bruins game.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.